This podcast is intended for healthcare professionals only. Welcome to the Oncology Knowledge into Practice podcast, where we discuss game-changing topics in clinical oncology with leading experts in the field. In this series, we're focusing on the ever-changing treatment landscape for cancers of the hematological system. This series is supported by educational grants from Servier Pharmaceuticals LLC and Takeda, who have had no influence on the content or choice of faculty. If you'd like to check out any of the publications that we mention in this episode, there's references and links for these in the episode notes. We're your hosts, Hannah Wilgar
and Andre Grasa. Continuing our discussion of optimal approaches in first-line ALL, today we'll be exploring best practice approaches to initiating treatment with pediatric regimens, and specifically, how to reduce the risk of adverse events. After quickly summarizing the data in the space, we'll be joined by Dr. Patrick Brown, Director of the Pediatric Leukemia Program and Associate Professor of Oncology at Johns Hopkins Medicine in Baltimore. As always, if you're already very familiar with the trial data evaluating this approach, do feel free to skip ahead to the interview at the 5-minute mark.
As discussed in the last two episodes, pediatric-inspired regimens are associated with improved outcomes to hyper-CVAD among younger patients with ALL. However, adverse events surrounding components of these pediatric regimens, including asparaginase, can make these regimens more complicated to initiate. This is a particular issue as adherence to the scheduled duration of asparaginase is associated with superior cure rates. For example, a Dana-Farber Cancer Institute ALL consortium study found that patients who tolerated 25 or fewer weeks of asparaginase had sufficiently worse outcomes than those who received at least 26 weeks.
One adverse event that spans all age groups is hypersensitivity. As summarized by Verma and colleagues last year, hypersensitivity to the pegylated form of asparaginase is the most common toxicity observed with the treatment. In addition to featuring pronounced symptoms, hypersensitivity is associated with the development of anti-asparaginase antibodies, which deactivate the enzyme and a loss of therapeutic effect. While hypersensitivity can be addressed by substituting multiple doses of an alternative formulation, Erwinia asparaginase, an international shortage of this alternative has limited the therapeutic options for those experiencing hypersensitivity to the pegylated asparaginase. This doesn't mean that pegylated asparaginase can't be used effectively, however. There are a number of different strategies used to both prevent and address hypersensitivity. For example, through pre-medication and therapeutic dose monitoring, or with rapid desensitization approaches.
Baruchel and colleagues published a summary of an expert panel discussion discussing these approaches. In essence, therapeutic drug monitoring, or TDM, involves monitoring of serum asparaginase activity. Asparaginase is used to deplete plasma asparagine levels and starve ALL cancer cells of this amino acid, and TDM can be used to identify patients with sufficient asparaginase activity to ensure therapeutic benefit. Not only that, but TDM can be used as a dose adjustment tool, individualizing asparaginase doses depending on asparaginase activity. TDM has allowed for pre-medication with histamine antagonists and steroids. Whereas before people were worried that these agents would mask clinical symptoms, measuring asparaginase activity means that clinicians can monitor for asparaginase inactivation while also reducing symptoms of hypersensitivity that patients may experience.
Implementing universal premedication and TDM across patients has been associated with improvement outcomes in a number of studies. For example, Cooper and colleagues published a retrospective chart review of 122 patients following implementation of the premedication and TDM approach. In this paper, the authors observed a reduction in asparaginase substitution from 17.2% to 7.4%, and a reduction in adverse event occurrence rate from 17.2% to 5.9% post-policy implementation. The authors also observed a very low rate of silent inactivation, in which anti-asparaginase antibodies are produced and result in a loss of asparaginase function.
Where hypersensitivity does occur, rapid desensitization can also be employed to help manage the event. As described by Verma and colleagues in 2018, the authors published the 13-step chemotherapy desensitization protocol developed by Castells and colleagues to administer pegylated asparaginase to 5 patients who previously experienced a hypersensitivity reaction. Following the protocol during reinduction allowed all five patients to reinduct without a hypersensitivity reaction, and three had sustained activity, with one patient experiencing inactivation and another developing low activity, consistent with accelerated clearance.
Utilization of all three measures can help reduce asparaginase-related adverse events. Marini and colleagues published an example of this, where their center created a multidisciplinary asparaginase allergy committee to review hypersensitivity reactions to asparaginase therapy. In addition, staff were educated on managing hypersensitivity reactions. An institution-wide pre-medication policy was mandated, and standardized guidelines on implementing TDM were created. Following implementation of these measures, the center observed a significant reduction in asparaginase switch rates from the pegylated formulation to the Erwinia formulation. To be specific, the switch rate reduced from 21% to 7% following the multidisciplinary approach. This begs the question, though, how do we bring these multidisciplinary approaches into clinical practice? What are the roles and responsibilities of each team member to ensure protocols are implemented? Joining us this week to answer that very question is Dr. Patrick Brown, Director of the Pediatric Leukemia Program and Associate Professor of Oncology at Johns Hopkins Medicine in Baltimore.
Welcome and thank you for joining us.
Oh, thank you for having me. I appreciate the opportunity.
So for our first question, you were a co-author on a 2019 paper in pediatric blood cancer about implementing universal premedication and therapeutic drug monitoring. Could you please comment on your experience of implementing these protocols in the local setting?
Sure. So our experience with this began when we first started to use pegasparaginase as an IV formulation. And there were, you know, a couple of things that we immediately noticed. And one was that when we began IV PEG infusions, patients that had reactions would have them almost immediately. And these would be, often certainly very severe and distressing reactions where patients would, you know, become flushed and experience a lot of anxiety, and they would get, you know, sometimes swelling around their lips. And these looked for all the world like they were hypersensitivity reactions and of the classic kind that we had in the past associated with neutralizing the drug. We also, around the same time, it became available to us to have therapeutic drug monitoring. And so those were really the two main developments. You know, one was that with the use of IV PEG, we were having these very rapid onset reactions that were hard to interpret in terms of whether they were true neutralizing hypersensitivity reactions versus just infusion reactions to the drug. And then at the same time, therapeutic drug monitoring had become widely available. And so, you know, the first case that we addressed in this new era to try to make sense of this was a child that had one of these reactions. And so what we decided to do was to pre-medicate with Benadryl and hydrocortisone and either Zantac or Pepcid, one of the other antihistamine, and re-challenge the patient. And we slowed the infusion down. And then we checked to see whether they had achieved good asparaginase levels a week later. And in fact, they had. And so what that told us was that at least some of these reactions may not be true neutralizing hypersensitivity reactions. And so, you know, perhaps we could, by using pre-medication and therapeutic drug monitoring, we may be able to reduce the incidence and severity of these reactions and also reduce the need to switch from pegasparaginase to Erwinia asparaginase, which is the backup product. So that was the background that we used to begin the study that we published, which was we changed our local procedures to pre-medicate and do therapeutic drug monitoring on all patients. And as the paper pointed out, it resulted in a profound decrease in the severity and incidence of reactions. And also we were able to avoid switching from PEG to other products in the vast, vast majority of patients.
Brilliant. Thank you for that. So in general, how should serum asparaginase concentrations affect individual doses? Is there an algorithm you would recommend?
So in terms of serum asparaginase concentrations, there have been various thresholds for the concentrations that had been used for what would be considered an adequate level. And I think that what we generally think of on our site is that the optimal level would be 0.4 international units per mil, but anything over 0.1 would be considered adequate. What our study showed was that the vast majority of patients, when they are pre-medicated and receive the IV peg and then we check 7 days later, achieve that 0.4 level or above. Our average was about 0.9 on our study. I think that if you're between 0.1 and 0.4, that's probably adequate, but because that's probably the best that you'd be able to achieve with alternative products such as Erwinia, but I think optimal would be 0.4 and above. That's the way we approach it locally, at least.
Wonderful, thank you. So rapid desensitization approaches have also been explored to help reduce the number of patients switching from pegylated asparaginase to the Erwinia formulation. In general, how do you recommend this decision is made? Should desensitization approaches be implemented as standard, or is it a case-by-case basis to decide who is immediately switched to Erwinia?
Well, it's a great question, and I think that the desensitization protocols that have been published are quite effective potential approaches to the problem of hypersensitivity. What I would say is this: there's two types of reactions that occur. One is an infusion reaction, and those in the vast majority of cases with pre-medication, you can get patients through their infusion and achieve good asparaginase activity levels. And for situations like that, I don't think that desensitization is necessary because there's a much simpler way of addressing the issue. For true hypersensitivity reactions that end up neutralizing the drug, there's only two potentials for addressing that. One is to treat with Erwinia, and the other is to attempt desensitization. In the current situation that we have, where Erwinia is in great shortage and that it may not be available much of the time, that really leaves desensitization as the only option. I think if you're faced with a situation where Erwinia is available, then it's really it really depends on, I don't think there's one right answer for whether to choose switching to Erwinia versus desensitization. The potential advantage in my mind of desensitization in that setting is that if you can successfully desensitize and continue to give pegasparaginase, then the potency of asparagine depletion may be greater than if you switch to Erwinia. And so I don't think there's one right answer. I think it really depends on individual patients and what's available at individual institutions.
Great, thank you. Finally, do you have any key piece of advice to our audience on how to implement universal pre-medication and therapeutic drug monitoring into their local setting?
I think my one piece of advice is this is really a multidisciplinary approach. One of the key factors at our local institution for making this successful was to ensure that the physicians, the nurses, the pharmacists, all of the advanced practice providers were all on the same page, and that we're all kind of committed to this new approach of doing universal pre-medication and therapeutic drug monitoring. You know, in the past, there was really a fear of pre-medicating prior to pegasparaginase because the fear was that if we masked a hypersensitivity reaction, then we wouldn't know which patients needed to be switched to alternative products. In the era of therapeutic drug monitoring, that fear is no longer justified because if you can universally check therapeutic drug monitoring, then there's no chance that you're going to miss a patient that's neutralizing the drug by doing pre-medication. So that would be my one piece of advice, would be to make sure that ahead of time, before incorporating universal pre-medication and therapeutic drug monitoring, that you get all of the different groups together and make sure that you're all in agreement that this is the best approach. The second piece of advice I would have is just to be just to recognize that there's going to be some period of adjustment, that that the fear that comes with these reactions is quite real, but over time people will become more comfortable with being able to kind of press through some of these symptoms, both the patients and the providers, because it's the right thing to do for patients. And again, at the beginning, there was a lot of trepidation with this idea that we would continue the infusion even in patients that are beginning to have some of these symptoms. But as time has gone on, our staff has become very comfortable with this, and they recognize that when patients are pre-medicated, that their reactions are much less severe, and the patients themselves know that if they can wait it out, that the symptoms will get better, and that they'll be able to get the leukemia treatment that they need.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much for joining us today and for answering all of our questions.
Well, thank you very much, Hannah. I've greatly enjoyed it, and I hope it's helpful.
So that brings us to the end of today's episode. To recap on the key points we discussed, there are a number of different strategies used to both prevent and address hypersensitivity to asparaginase, including premedication, therapeutic dose monitoring, desensitization, or switching the asparaginase formulation. When implementing these strategies, it is important to ensure in advance that all members of the multidisciplinary team are committed to the approach, and to allow for a period of adjustment while patients and providers come to recognize that worrying symptoms will subside. Again, if you'd like to check out any of the publications that we've mentioned today, you'll find the references for these in the episode notes.
If you enjoyed today, please do subscribe and join us then. And if you have time to leave us a review, we'd love to hear your feedback. If you want more, you can also find free accredited continuing medical education modules on our website, onkip.com. And you can find a link to this in the episode notes. So please do check it out. If you're a Twitter fan, our handle is @onkip. Thank you for listening. We'll see you next time.